I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about an initiative aimed at helping emerging adult women move from economic instability to economic stability. We're going to discuss what it takes to help women take control of their financial lives. We're going to talk about NEXT, a push from the Women's Fund of Central Indiana. My guest will be Jennifer Pope Baker, the Executive Director of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about what it takes to create opportunities for women here in central Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guest is Jennifer Pope Baker, who is the Executive Director of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana. Got a new initiative called NEXT that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about. But we probably, Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We probably ought to start by talking a little bit about what the Women's Fund is.
Women's Fund is a special interest fund of the Central Indiana Community Foundation. We have been around for 18 years, and we focus on creating options and opportunities for women and girls in our community. We do that in three different ways. We raise money, we give it away, and we do philanthropy education. And the giving away money part is what our next initiative is all about. The focus of Women's Fund with our grant making is to help women and girls serving organizations create options in the areas of caregiving, domestic violence, and insufficient income. In the areas of caregiving and in all areas, we try to do two things. We try to break cycles, but we also try to do emergency Band-Aid work. Mm-hmm. And in caregiving, in central Indiana, we only have 26 licensed child care spots for every 100 children in our community. And so not only have we funded programs that allow women who are trying to go back to work have scholarships for their children, but we have also provided funding to an organization called Business Ownership Initiative. Several years ago, we gave them $150,000 to help women living in poverty become licensed child caregivers in their own homes. And what happened then was those women were able to have their own income, but also the women who lived across the street, next door, and upstairs had a safe, reliable place for their children to go during the day.
That was convenient also, so that they didn't have to drive elsewhere, since transportation is sometimes an issue as well.
That's exactly right, and it created neighborhood stabilization. In the area of domestic violence, we create emergency opportunities for women and their children if they need to leave and be someplace safe at 2 o'clock in the morning. But we also fund programs such as healthy relationships, so children and teenagers can learn what a healthy relationship looks like and what to do if they're in a relationship that's not healthy. And then insufficient income is what ties it all together. Mm-hmm. So we have done a lot of the emergency Band-Aid work to help a woman receive job training, to help her receive appropriate attire to wear to an interview or to wear to a job. But the work that we do with young girls to help them realize that there are possibilities beyond today, that they can graduate from high school, that they can receive a higher education, that they can focus on job opportunities that allow for long-term economic stability is what's really critical. It's breaking the cycle that's really going to make a difference, and that's where our next initiative sprung from.
So let's talk a little. What does NEXT do?
So NEXT was created as a response to girl-serving organizations telling us that they have young women, and we're using poverty as a baseline here, mm-hmm. that they have young women who participate in fantastic programming, whether it's through Girls Incorporated or Girl Scouts or community centers or Future Promises or Project Home Indy, where these girls do great things and then they turn 18 or graduate from high school and they're no longer eligible to participate in those programs, and they don't have programs that are culturally competent to send them to, which in no way diminishes the great work of the organization serving women in our community, but they're typically serving an older woman who's more mature and more focused. And I think everybody understands that emerging adults think they know everything when they really don't know everything.
That anyone who's ever been a parent does.
Exactly.
Anyway. Yeah.
That they're young and they're disruptive and they need a lot of guidance. They need a lot of tough love and a lot of care. And it's more than the organizations that are stretched so thin serving adults are able to do. So we created an initiative called NEXT to look at the emerging adult population of girls 18 to 24 years old to help move them from long-term poverty to a lifetime of economic stability, which, as you can imagine, is an enormous charge.
So how are you going to go about it? What are the...
Our next initiative is a process that includes an incubator at the beginning. Right now, we are searching for social entrepreneurs from our own community and all across the country to apply to be a NEXT Fellow. And when a NEXT Fellow is awarded, they will spend 1 to 2 years incubating solutions for this population, so for a narrow slice of the 18 to 24-year-old group of women living in poverty, to move them to economic prosperity. Their fellowship time will be, they will be an employee of CICF, of which we're a special interest fund, and they will receive a salary of $90,000 annually and full benefits. That's a lot of money in the nonprofit world, but we think that it's important to incentivize someone who's highly skilled, who's probably in a job that is already very rewarding for them, to either quit that job and focus on NEXT in our community or even move to our community to focus on this. Once the solution is fully incubated and we agree that it's viable, we will fund that solution fully through 2025. So it's a 10-year bold commitment of millions and millions of dollars to help move these young women to a lifetime of economic stability.
I'm assuming there's a cap on the high end. I mean, if I come to you and say, oh, I got a great idea, you know, and it's only going to cost you $2 billion over that time.
But $2 billion might be a stretch for us in our fundraising. However, we haven't put a cap on it at this time. We really want to allow the social entrepreneurs to think boldly and to really think about how they can create holistic programs for these young women, because you can't wave a magic wand. If you have lived in poverty, you probably are surrounded by people who lived in poverty. Chances are good you've experienced some sort of trauma in your lifetime. You were talking about people who probably have fractured lives in very many ways. So they're going to need to move beyond emergency health care to really preventative holistic health care. They're going to need mental health services for their past experiences, but also mental health services as they move to stability. So if you have always been scrambling to survive, that you don't know where you're going to sleep, or you don't know where your next meal is going to come from, and we're saying we want people to live an economically stable life, well, then you're in a space where you can actually save money. How do you think differently about that? How do you create a positive relationship with money? You know, they need to, you cannot, it's unlikely that you have an economically stable life if you don't have a good education. And so how do you get a good education without that surrounding of supports?
How much, overall, how much has the fund committed to this initiative? I mean, what is the overall budget?
Right now, we have all of the dollars committed that will pay for incubating the three fellowships during those 2 years. And then once we know what the solutions are, then we will put together a comprehensive fundraising plan and move forward with that. We have good plans in place for really bold fundraising and bold asks. And by that, I mean asking people for 6- and 7-figure gifts to support that. However, that is going to just be one piece, because we need everybody to support that. And at the same time that we're raising money for our next initiative, we're not going to forget about our other grantees and the other work that we do. So we will continue to raise money for our endowment that supports the other grants organizations in our community.
We are talking about helping emerging young women, women 18 to 24, move to some sort of economic stability in their lives. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. And I'm going to ask this question flatly, and it's not designed to be pejorative or challenging or anything like that, but it, in terms of there are many, many worthy causes. You know, we've just recently done shows on the importance of you know, preschool education and all of that. And I ask a variation, why is this problem an important one to solve?
It's a great question to ask, because if a woman is healthy and able to take care of herself and her family without being dependent on the goodwill of others, then her family is healthy, her community is healthy, she is better able to focus on her job at work, and we end up having a healthier community both business-wise and socially as well. We have worked closely with the Department of Public Safety on doing a community conversation with teen moms and young women who are struggling in our community, and the Director of Public Safety, Troy Riggs, has said publicly that he thinks if we get this right, that this could help with crime in our community. So if you think about a woman who is a parent, she's living in poverty. She's probably living in poverty because she doesn't have a good education. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a good education. She doesn't have good financial support. She doesn't have good housing. She doesn't have good child care. Then she's going to really struggle to be a good parent. And maybe she hasn't had a good role model as a parent. And so she might love her children as deeply as I love my children with all the educational and financial supports that I do. But if she doesn't know how to care for them well, if she doesn't know how to encourage them to excel in school and give them the same opportunities that I can give my children, then her children are going to go on to repeat the same problems. They're going to be more vulnerable to be a victim of crime. They're going to be more vulnerable to participate in crime. And so when we can help women have the opportunities to support themselves well, to be well educated, to financially take care of themselves and to take care of their family, then their children are more apt to be successful as well.
Does it frustrate you? I mean, obviously, I can tell just listening to you that this work means a great deal to you and all of that. That you have to make the case for something like this based on the impact it will have on everybody else's life and not the woman who is at the center of it.
Right. If I let it frustrate me, it would make my job very difficult. And one of the philosophies of Women's Fund from the very beginning was to look at our situation and say, what can we do to make it better, as opposed to looking at our situation and saying it's somebody else's fault because people aren't paying attention, other people are causing problems. And so I've really embraced that philosophy to help illuminate what the problems are and then help people in our community understand how they can contribute to making a positive difference so those problems no longer exist.
But, I mean, at some level, it sounds almost as if we're talking about a woman just being a vehicle for others' dreams rather than her own. Is it possible to make this, to advocate and say, you know, we're a country of dreams and possibilities. That ought to apply to everyone.
You know what? You're exactly right about that. And it would be a lot easier and a lot more joyful to be able to advocate in that way. But you are right that we have to demonstrate what the ripple impact is. And I think that in our community and in our country as a whole, there are so many fractured groups of people. There are so many opportunities to contribute your philanthropic dollars and your time that everyone who has a job like I do has to figure out the best way to make people understand why what they're doing is so important and why the impact is so wide.
And in terms of that larger impact, I mean, if suppose this is successful, you mentioned Troy Riggs has said it could help with crime. Do we have any idea what the economic impact might be?
We're trying to figure out that right now, and we're working to do to find the research and the information that can demonstrate if a woman moves from public supports to her own supports in the path to getting there, how this will save our community in the long run. So we just have anecdotal information right now. We do not have hard evidence, and we need to have that, and that will be a part of the work of the next initiative.
We are talking about moving emerging young women from economic instability to economic stability through an initiative of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana called NEXT. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881, or you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. My guest is the Executive Director, Jennifer Pope Baker. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about NEXT, an initiative of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana that is designed to help move emerging young women. We're defining that, and we're going to talk about that here in a minute, about what the definition is, between the ages roughly of 18 to 24, from economic instability to economic stability. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I just had a suggestion. I just tuned in and just heard a little bit of the program, and this is close and near and dear to my heart. I'm a 40-year-old mother of two young girls, and I was very fortunate, and I'm from Indianapolis, very fortunate in having great role models, and I, you know, my dad spent a lot of time with me as a child, basically raised by my father. And the one thing that stuck with me and I think put me on a different path was travel. And it's not always possible, especially if you're in poverty, that, you know, you don't ever go outside of 465. You don't ever go outside of your neighborhood. But just as you're formulating these solutions, these comprehensive solutions, to incorporate the component of travel and to allow these 18 to 24-year-olds the opportunity to get outside of 465 to see that there's another city, there's another state, there's another part of the country, that was huge for me. And I'm back in Indiana now. I've lived in Washington, D.C. I've lived in Atlanta, Georgia. And I still have that adventurous drive because of being exposed at a young age, and you just don't realize how that turns your attention away from negative things that are in your life to, oh, there's so much possibility outside of just all of this negativity I'm living with day to day. And just to take these ladies on a trip out of town every once in a while, I think will make a huge difference in their lives. And that's my comment.
Thank you very much for the call, Shannon. Well, that raises the question, you know, in terms of expanding that sense of possibility. What I know you're looking for the fellows and the incubation period to do that, but what are the charge that you are going to give the people who would apply for this?
The fellows have a huge charge and a huge responsibility to make NEXT a possibility. And we're anticipating and expecting that they create holistic programs that completely wrap around mm-hmm. a young woman. It's not enough to have an education. It's not enough to have a minimum wage job. You have to have so many layers of support upon that. You have to not be worried about how you're going to get your next meal. You can't be worried about where you're going to sleep mm-hmm. at night. And you have to have the bottom level of the pyramid taken mm-hmm. care of. And, you know, Shannon raises an interesting point. Travel absolutely expands your horizons. I anticipate the people who are going to participate in the NEXT initiative Many of them have probably never seen Monument Circle. Mm-hmm. They haven't been to the public library. They haven't been to the museums. They haven't even seen the things inside of 465, which I think people find really startling. We funded a really interesting program through Girls Inc. many years ago called She's on the Money. And they were working with young girls, and they learned that they had to adapt the very first session to help these young girls learn what our currency looks like, because many of these girls had never seen real money before. And to me, that seems almost incomprehensible, that there are children in our community who have never seen or used money. And so when you think about it like that, we have young women with whom we might be starting very close to zero.
We are talking about NEXT, an initiative of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana, to help emerging young women, those between 18 and 24 who are in some economic distress, move to economic stability. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So let's talk about how we define, you know, we've got a parameter. We've got a six-year window, basically, of the women were looking to attempt to serve with all of this. Let's flesh out the rest of the profile. I mean, who are we looking for?
We are inviting the entrepreneurs to slice that demographic in the way that makes most sense for their solution. So here are some possibilities, and I am not listing these possibilities in order of our preference, nor is this list exhaustive, but here are some examples. They could look at emerging adult women who are teen mothers. Mm-hmm. They could look at women who have a criminal past or a history with substance abuse or women who've experienced trauma. They could be looking at women who live in rural communities of central Indiana whose opportunities are limited in a very different way. They could be looking at young immigrant women who came to this country with their parents when they were very little, and they might not have legal status now, but they live here and they consider themselves Hoosiers. So what's next for them? They could be looking at young women who grew up in a household with two parents who were very emotionally attentive and really want the very best for their children, but they just don't know how to give their daughter the support she needs to excel. She could be the first one in their family to have ever graduated from high school, straight A student, model behavior, comes from a great family who just isn't equipped to take her to the next stage. So we welcome the entrepreneurs to create solutions that meet any of those profiles or perhaps a profile I didn't mention. And what we anticipate is the most creative, most effective solutions will be able to be transferred not only to other populations of young women in our mm-hmm. community, but also all over the country. We expect that the solutions will be measurable and they will be replicable.
So that raises the next obvious question, which is, how are you going to define success for this? I mean, what constitutes a win?
Well, right now, the number one definition will be at the end of 2025, that they can demonstrate the population of women that they worked with have either moved to or are on a significant path to a lifetime of economic stability. And I should mention that the way we're defining economic stability is looking at the number that is defined for Central Indiana as what you need to be stable. So for one adult with two children in Central Indiana needs to make $42,000 a year to not mm-hmm. be dependent on the goodwill of others. And for perspective of listeners who might not realize, if you work a minimum wage job, you would have to work three minimum wage jobs is what we consider full time to meet that standard, which, of course, is physically impossible.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Shannon, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Asks you to give some examples of the kind of entrepreneur mentors NEXT is looking for.
We are looking for entrepreneurs who, first of all, show great leadership and innovation and creativity, that are well respected in their community. And I don't just mean in their city, that's obviously important, but their community that they're already working in, that their peers respect them, that they have a solid working knowledge and experience either with this age group or with moving people to economic stability. We are looking for people who are determined. We are looking for people who are collaborative. That's particularly important if somebody's coming to our community from somewhere else in the country. Indianapolis is known for being very collaborative and working well with others. And we are going to expect that the three next fellows will incubate together, that they'll be in the same space, that they will help lift each other up, that they'll research together. They'll share data and information. They will still have their own independent solutions that they're working on, but we really believe that they will create better solutions when they're working together.
We are talking about how we help economically distressed young women ages 18 to 24 find their way to economic stability. Grant, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I was curious. I'm a younger gentleman, about 27 years old, and having heard about outreach programs like this, I think they're very important to the city itself, but I'm curious. A lot of these young women, I have to imagine, if they're impoverished, maybe they come from a family where they have maybe two or three siblings in that household, other young women. I'm curious if maybe there's some, I don't want to so much say abstinence, but sexual health education for these women being provided by the outreach and just kind of some of the mentors in a way that maybe the cycle isn't self-perpetuating, if that seems to make any sense, and hopefully that doesn't offend anybody.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Grant.
Grant, we fund a lot of programs that work with girls to help them understand their bodies, how their bodies work, and how they can make smart and safe choices. Certainly, I would anticipate that Next Solutions would help young women understand the same sorts of things. We did a community conversation in June with a group of teen mothers from our community. And I think if everybody in our community would have seen the 15 to 20 young women who were filing into Light of the World that night with their babies, with their toddlers in tow, that there would have been a wide variety of opinions about this group of young women. You think that one of the things that's really important to know is that a lot of times young women don't have the full information about how their bodies work and what the consequences of different behavior, sexual behaviors are. And I think a lot of people also don't understand that a lot of these women are victims of crime, that they didn't choose to be a mother mm-hmm. at a young age. And I think it's important for us to put aside middle-class assumptions and values about that and realize that things aren't always as they seem and that it's important to understand that providing support and services to teen mothers is not encouraging them to become a teen mother again, but to help them be the best mother they can so their child is not so vulnerable and help them to make smart choices so they don't become the mother of two children when they're teenagers.
I'll go back to a variation. I think Grant obviously was trying to be very diplomatic and sensitive in asking that question. But I got to wonder, I mean, is that, you know, when we're talking about entrepreneurship for economically disadvantaged young men, very rarely do I hear about, you know, how a sex education talk or curriculum needs to be part of that. Is that part of this cycle of the assumption somehow that sexual and reproductive responsibility are almost exclusively, you know, women's chores and not men's? Is that something we need to break down if we're really going to break this cycle down?
I think it's absolutely imperative for young women, young men, boys and girls to receive that same education, the same information about making smart choices and the consequences of all their choices. But ultimately, the woman is the one who's going to have to bear the responsibility if she becomes a mother, regardless of whether or not the father is an active parent. And it's important for her to understand that the consequence will be more severe for her.
In terms of looking at these challenges, the ones you ticked off earlier in terms of how you might slice and dice the demographic, research you've looked at so far, what's the largest contributing factor here? What is the biggest barrier that young women who are in economically disadvantaged situations have to overcome?
I think two things that are equal. One is having a quality education, access to a quality education and the supports to be successful, first in graduating from high school and then in the next step in her education. And the second one is being surrounded by people who are lifting her up as opposed to pulling her down. Because a lot of young women are in a space where they hear people say to them, what makes you think you're so smart? What makes you think you're better than us? And they pull her down instead of lift her up. One of the things that was really inspirational to us when we were first looking at this is the story that received a lot of attention 2 summers ago about Lala Draughton, who was a very well-known high school basketball player who went on to college and was doing really well. And she committed a crime and the school let her go back. She had good supports in our community. And she was involved in a fight that was organized over social media. And when her loved ones found out about it, instead of saying, stop, you know, you have this opportunity to do more, you have this second chance at a higher education, they loaded up their cars and they went to watch and they took the little children with them. And Lala died that night at that fight. And it really helped us understand that sometimes the people who are supposed to love you the most aren't the ones who are pushing you up and lifting you up and helping you grow to be bigger and better, that sometimes they're just pulling you right back down.
Family is such a powerful force. How do you break through that?
That is a fantastic question that is probably better posed to someone who is an expert in that area. I don't know, but I know that it's something that that has to be a part of this. Like I mentioned before, the mental health aspect. It's not just looking at where you came from, but how you're moving forward. Because as you move forward, the challenges as you become more prosperous are going to be significant. And how do you deal with the people that were left behind? How do you either help them out or move on without them? And that's going to be really difficult for people.
Is there, because you say it's a mental health and really a way of looking at the world, I mean, how much of this has also become so internalized that, you know, that the young woman is literally afraid, even if it's not a great situation, of leaving behind the world she knows, because change does bring that.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people think that the evil you know is better than what you don't know. And, you know, that's why a lot of victims don't leave violent situations and domestic violence, because at least they know what they have there and they don't know what's going to happen when they walk out that door. And I think no matter what your circumstance in life is, it's really easy to be comfortable with where you are and hard to move to something that could be better because of what the potential unknown is.
With the entrepreneurs who are going to be working on this, in terms of the support systems you're going to provide them, I mean, will some of it be that they'll have access to mental health professionals or somebody to guide them and say, okay, if this is the approach you want to take, this is something you have to think about?
Absolutely, that we will require for them to work with people who are experts in all those areas of holistic care so they can shape programs. And they also have to work with women who fit the next profile. You can't create a program for people without involving the recipients, that they have to be a part of shaping that program.
How are you going to vet these ideas? I mean, I would anticipate there's going to be a significant demand. People would want to do this.
I agree. And we don't know how many letters of interest we're going to receive. The window opened on September 2nd and it goes to December 2nd. We have a lot more than we thought we would. So depending on how many we have in December will depend on how we vet them. But we have a lot of different alternatives in place with great experts, both in nonprofit, but also people who are entrepreneurs who have started for-profit businesses and been really successful, to help us think about it from an entrepreneurial approach.
We are talking about how we help emerging young women who are in economically distressed circumstances move to economic stability. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. And Twitter is WFYI. I'm talking with Jennifer Pope Baker. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about NEXT, an initiative of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana. My guest is Jennifer Pope Baker. We're talking about how we move economically distressed young women, ages 18 to 24, to economic stability and really life stability. Ultimately, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Probably ought to ask the question, I mean, what are the specific challenges that young women face that young men don't?
Well, the number one challenge would be being a parent, and that still our society in many ways expects different things from women than they do from men, and that opportunities are typically offered more to young men than young women. And Women's Fund has always taken the tact that we're not going to place blame about those situations. We're just going to create opportunities for young women, whether it's young women who are living in poverty or any young woman or a woman of any age in our community, to engage thoughtfully in creating opportunities for herself, and then for us to help create opportunities for her, whether it's helping our board members become connected to other boards, nonprofit and for-profit in the community, or whether it's helping the young women who are part of the NEXT profile open up a whole new world to her.
We are talking about how we help emerging young women achieve lives of economic stability. Sybil, welcome to the program.
Hello, John. Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to ask Jennifer a little bit more about the vetting process. I'm an entrepreneur who is looking for this same demographic that the NEXT initiative is looking for. And I want to know, is the Women's Fund looking for people or organizations who have track records already, or are they willing to work with people who are trying to find the same solutions they're looking for, who may not have all the answers yet, but who want to help create, you know, the research and do the research and those kinds of things as a single entrepreneur, singular entrepreneur, rather than an organization?
Great question. Thanks very much for the call, Sybil.
Thank you.
Hi, Sybil. I appreciate that question. We anticipate that our NEXT fellows will primarily come to us as individual applications, that they will be individual entrepreneurs. And some people might have a hard time wearing the entrepreneur hat and not realize that that definition fits them. We're looking for people who are willing to take a risk, to figure out what the solutions are for the way they define the population, that they are willing to work collaboratively with the experts in the community. So someone might have a great solution, but they really don't know anything about substance abuse. So they're willing to connect with the person who understands about substance abuse. Or they might have a great solution and have no idea what the transportation possibilities are in our community or about affordable housing. So the entrepreneur has to be willing to learn about those things. They have to be willing to talk to the experts about those things. They have to be willing to collaborate with the other NEXT fellows. In addition to that, we are going to create an advisory team for the NEXT fellows. So there will be people who can help them figure out all the pieces that they want. So you might create a solution that results in a new nonprofit, and I would anticipate that not all the next fellows would understand about nonprofit law and governance and HR and budgeting, and that we anticipate the entrepreneurs will bring different levels of expertise, but the most important thing is they are going to be determined and that they are going to be full on trying to create this solution. We anticipate that there will be mistakes and there'll be bumps in the road, and we will be doing a lot of evaluation, have very timely benchmarks, so then when there is a bump in the road, we can help that entrepreneur evaluate why it happened and what they could do differently and positively to turn it around and move forward.
And assuming people are listening to this and they're thinking, oh, that sounds like something I'd like to do, how do you go about applying or becoming, expressing interest?
Our website, which is womensfund.org, 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 there is a page dedicated to Next. And we believe that almost every question that people have is answered on that. We held two webinars earlier this summer and had over 200 participants in those webinars. And so we've come up with a lot of questions and the answers, which can be found on that website. And if the answer is not there, then there is an opportunity for people to ask us that question. The opportunity to send a letter of interest to us for participating in the Next Fellowships. The window opened on September 2nd. It closes on December 2nd. And depending on the volume of letters of interest we receive, we will notify applicants within 4 to 6 weeks. And we have a lot of different plans in place. If we receive 30, or if we receive 300, or if we receive 3,000, that's going to be a whole different ballgame. But we actually have some great national connections that have helped us figure out, what if we get 3,000? How are we going to do that? I mean, I joked for a while that my son's fourth grade class is going to help vet him if we have 3,000, but that's not really the case. We really do have a plan in place if we receive that many, which I would find extraordinarily unlikely, but we know what we're going to do no matter how many we receive.
And what do you want to see in those letters of interest? I mean, is it more, I'm assuming it's more than, boy, this is a big problem, I'd like to help. Without really
right, right. Idea. We certainly, the fact that we have a very significant salary and benefit has been attractive to a lot of people, and it's easy to tell those who are really looking for the money and those who really understand the problem. I anticipate the ones that will be most successful will be able to demonstrate their vision, their creativity, and their past leadership, that they can show us how they have been successful in developing, implementing, and leading programs in other areas. And I anticipate that people who are successful will be able to demonstrate that they understand what the Next Initiative is all about, how it fits within Women's Fund, how it will improve our community, that if they are an applicant from outside of Indianapolis, that they will demonstrate that they understand what Indianapolis is like and that they have a commitment to creating a solution and working in our community.
We are talking about Next, an initiative of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana designed to encourage experimentation and finding ways to help emerging young women ages 18 to 24 move from lives of economic instability to economic stability. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. You mentioned that there are going to be tiny benchmarks along the way. What do you think are going to be some of the early indicators? What are the things you're going to be looking for to say, oh, this is working, I feel good about this?
Well, in the first part of the incubation, we're going to know it's working when we can tell the entrepreneur, the selected Next Fellows have identified the kinds of people that they want to work with to learn more, that they are thoughtful in how they're doing research, that they might not know the name of the person or where to find them, but they say, we want to talk to someone who is an expert in mental health. We want to talk to someone who's an expert in primary care. I'm going to talk to someone who really understands the consequences of recidivism and how that impacts a young woman who's come out of our criminal justice system. So I think that the earliest benchmark is going to be demonstrating a clear understanding of the problem, a clear understanding of who all the potential providers are and the people who can join them. And then as they move along, you know, have they identified a group of young women who either are right now in that next population or maybe come through it? Every month we introduce Friends of Women's Fund through my monthly e-newsletter to a young woman who either today fits into the next profile, will someday, or already has been part of that profile, so they can see the scope of the problem, what it is today, or how a woman's life was changed dramatically by not receiving what she would have through the next initiative. Mm-hmm. And so we need our entrepreneurs to demonstrate they know who those women are, that they know who can help provide counsel. So if they are going to reach out to a group of emerging adult women who are Latinas, well, then I want to see that they're working with all the Latina leadership in our community. They're not just the leadership, but the young women who will be a part of the next population, the young women who came through that age group and either did well or they didn't. And so we're going to want to see that they have a solid understanding in the early days.
And in terms of that, though, those are the early things as you're getting organized. What are going to be the signs you're looking for when they actually engage with the population that they're supposed to be helping or serving here?
Well, depending on what the solution is, we're really looking to them to say, these are the benchmarks and our timelines, but we're going to want to see that the young women are moving ahead with an education and an opportunity to be economically successful. That, you know, one of the things that the Centers for Working Families says about jobs are the ABCs, any job, a better job, and a career. The same things are going to have to happen with this group of women. You can't all of a sudden move from a GED to making $45,000 a year. What's the pathway to getting there? So we want to see that the entrepreneurs have established a solid pathway for getting there. And one of the biggest problems facing people trying to move from poverty to economic stability is the benefits cliff. So you might have a benefit, you know, a federal benefit that's implemented by our state, and you're receiving a voucher for food or housing or transportation, whatever it might be, and then you get a raise working at your minimum wage job, and you're making 10 cents more an hour, and so it gets pulled back. You're making 25 cents more an hour, and you lose that benefit. And let's say the benefit's childcare. You can make an extra quarter an hour and all of a sudden be out $220 a week in a childcare voucher.
And move further back.
And move further back. And so until the benefit cliff problem is solved, the next fellows are going to have to think really creatively on how they help the women they're serving move through poverty to stability while dealing with the benefit cliff.
That long time, the, you know, that long time goal of 2025, you know, a little more than 10 years from now, what in your mind constitutes, you know, success at that point? Say you're starting this and you've got a cohort of 18 to 24 year olds who are emerging and they're all right at that poverty line that you're using as right. the baseline. You know, what percentage of them being at the equivalent, because it won't be $42,000 a year.
Right.
11 years from now, that target will be moving. But will be at that sustainable level. What percentage of them do you think will constitute success?
You know what, I don't think I can give a good answer on that right now, John, because we don't know really how they're going to slice that population. And so some of the populations are going to be much more vulnerable. If you're working with a woman who has survived significant trauma and she's also previously been incarcerated or maybe has substance abuse problems, her path to economic stability is going to be much more difficult than that young woman who was a straight-A student in high school, was accepted to college. The family just doesn't know how they're going to afford it, to how to help her understand how to be successful and help get her moving along. Her path's going to be easier. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be hard, but she's going to get there much more quickly. And we are inviting the next fellows to challenge us on the age group. They might say 18 to 24, isn't going to work. We want to push that out. We want women to be able. We're using the 18 to 24 as the entry point because clearly if you're going to be doing this program for 10 years, they're not all going to be 18 to 24. Yeah. But to challenge us on that. And so if they're taking somebody who has immediately finished a girl serving program and they're able to take her from high school into college and then moving on, it's going to be a lot more successful than if they pick up a young woman who's 24 years old and she has 6 more years of baggage with her. So I think it's going to depend, and that is really going to require the next fellows to be thoughtful and innovative and flexible, because they're going to learn probably it's much harder than they anticipated.
Well, and it sounds like there's going to be a lot of effort focused here on this. If you're a young woman who is in that cohort right now, who fits that demographic, that description, and says, you know, it sounds like they're really going to be doing some things here that are designed to help me. You know, is there a way that that those young women can step up and say, I'd like to be part of that entering class? Or, you know, if you're going to experiment with me, because I don't like where I am, and I'm assuming almost anything would be better.
It's a super question. Once we identify who our next fellows are and they have their solutions, then we hope that they will identify those women right away and allow women to raise their hands. And so once we announce this, these are our next fellows, these are the areas they're concentrating in, we'll connect them to providers right now in the community. And so I would say to a young woman who has that feeling right now, first of all, calling 211 for information on how she can connect to adult serving programs right now, because certainly she wouldn't be turned away. The programming might not be as culturally appropriate for her, but she could still get help at her community center, at Dress for Success, and other places in our community. Right away, she could get help no matter how old she is. But if she hangs on for next, then she can be prepared for something that's more age-specific. All of our grantee organizations, the women and girls serving organizations in our community, know about next. We will make sure that they know to refer their clients, potential clients, clients they can't serve, to this program where it's a good fit.
And in terms of, you said that you'd started accepting letters of interest on September 2nd. Have you already gotten some?
We have, and we received more than we thought we would. I will tell you that we have not looked at them yet.
Okay.
And really,
do you have a volume count, though, on what they are?
We actually aren't announcing our volume count right now for two reasons. I don't want people to be discouraged and think, oh, my gosh, they have so many. Why should I go ahead and submit mine? Or, gosh, they only have a few. Is this really going to be successful? And so we're holding close to the vest the volume right now, because there could be somebody who finds out about this in November and puts together something that really knocks it out of the park, and I don't want them to be dissuaded by what we've already received.
And real quickly, again, we've got just a few seconds left. Could you give the URL again if somebody wants to send a letter?
Womensfund.org, women plural, womensfund.org.
Thank you. I think that's a great last word. I'd like to thank Jennifer Pope Baker, who's the Executive Director of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana, for joining us. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you. Likewise.
And I hope once you select these fellows, you'll come back and we'll talk about the great things they're going to do. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.